Hello and welcome to volume 44, number 24, of your weekly local news magazine, Grapevine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 14th of June, 2024. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreader Andy. And in this week's issue, two boats are stranded on the Broads whilst the big one leaves. Visits from Messrs Farage and Widdicombe, and the dreaded bus inspectors are back. In addition, we have the Vision Norfolk activity programme for July, and Andy comes up with some weird Norfolk expressions. All this coming your way during the next hour or so. But first, it's Ladies' Day for the birthdays. Yes, Monday is the day when both Diane Edwards and Edna Gurney will be celebrating, and all of us at Grapevine wish you both a very happy day. Right, it's news time, so over to Andy.
And with this week's news, I'm going to start with something that's dominating the country's news, the election. And the first one is a report of a rally in Great Yarmouth. And it's Nigel Farage, the leader of Reform UK, gave a speech at an election rally at Great Yarmouth Racecourse as campaigning continues for the general election. It followed the BBC debate between seven parties on Friday night, in which Mr Farage said the party's policies included introducing stop and search to tackle knife crime. And the Reform UK rally took place at 7pm on Tuesday, the 11th. The Great Yarmouth constituency has been under Conservative blue-collar wall since 2010. Rupert Lowe, the former chairman of Southampton Football Club, is standing for Reform UK, while the Tories picked James Clark followed the announcement that Sir Brandon Lewis was standing down after 14 years. Labour's candidate is Keir Cousins, Catherine Blakelock is standing for the English Democrats, Fiona Todd for the Lib Dems, and Trevor Rowson for the Greens. And there are also two independent candidates, Paul Brown and Claire Roulier. And a visitor to the town in aid of the election, Anne Widdicombe. She's already braved dancing the samba in front of a TV audience of millions, and now Anne Widdicombe has joined other thrill seekers in daring to ride one of Norfolk's most well-known attractions, Great Yarmouth's Joyland Snails. And the former Tory minister visited the renowned seaside site on Saturday as part of a trip to the coastal town to support Reform UK candidate Rupert Lowe's election campaign. The pair said they had a fantastic time exploring what Great Yarmouth has to offer. A highlight was riding one of the brightly coloured snails together before they both spoke at a ticketed event that evening. "The snails reminded me of the Tories. A bumpy ride," said Ms Widdicombe, who was booted out of the Conservative Party in 2019 after running as a European Parliament candidate for Nigel Farage's Brexit Party. Her visit came days before his arrival on Tuesday to give a speech at the election rally at Great Yarmouth Racecourse. Ms Widdicombe is doubtful the snails would appeal to Mr Farage. "I think he prefers a faster pace," she said. The constituency has become one of Norfolk's most fiercely contested seats, with the latest polls predicting a strong victory for Labour's Keir Cousins, with the Reform and the Conservative candidates James Clark vying for second place. There have already been signs of friction between Great Yarmouth's election candidates, with the Tory election hopeful blocking Mr Lowe on Facebook after he received a barrage of comments. Keir Cousins has also been criticised by the former Southampton football chairman, with Mr Lowe attacking a social media post on the 80th anniversary of D-Day. The Labour parliamentary candidate subsequently apologised for putting his campaign logo on an image of troops landing on the Normandy beaches, which was quickly deleted within minutes. And that's enough about the general election. Moving to more usual news, a man has been arrested after armed police were called to reports of a knife man. And officers were called to Havenbridge House on North Quay in Great Yarmouth at 7 p.m. on Tuesday, following reports of a man being threatened by another man with a knife. During the incident, the road was partially closed for an hour and a half. Nobody was injured. A man in his 50s was arrested and taken to Great Yarmouth Police Station for questioning, and he has been released on bail until August the 7th. And staying with crime, two men have been jailed after violently assaulting a man walking home from a night out in Norwich. Jordan Blizzard, aged 30, of Rodney Road, Great Yarmouth, and Keaton Stavry, aged 20, of Chaucer Road, Great Yarmouth, both appeared before Norwich Crown Court on Wednesday and were put behind bars. The sentences follow an incident on October the 1st, 2023, when the victim was repeatedly punched and kicked in the head and body while walking through Tombland. When the victim walked past the attackers, they made comments towards him, and he turned around to speak to them. The pair continued to walk towards the victim before pushing him to the ground and violently assaulting him. Blizzard punched the victim 12 times in the head, as well as kicking him 7 times. And Stavry punched the victim's head 3 times and kicked his body 4 times. They both ran away, leaving the man on the floor. The victim managed to find a police officer after the attack, and he was taken to hospital with serious injuries to his eyelid and socket. CCTV from the night found that Blizzard already had a run-in with the police. He had been handed a Section 35 dispersal notice, ordering him to leave the city within 48 hours, which he ignored. Police went to Blizzard's Great Yarmouth address, where he was arrested on suspicion of grievous bodily harm. After seizing his phone, texts were found discussing the fight that had taken place that night. Stavry was arrested after being found through a search of Blizzard's phone. The two were both released and on bail before being charged with actual bodily harm. Appearing at Norwich Crown Court, Blizzard and Stavry were sentenced to 10 months and 8 months in prison, respectively. Judge Moore said, "The incident as a whole was really quite disgraceful and fueled by drink. It is good fortune and not good judgment that his injuries were not more severe." He added, "People die when they're attacked in the way the pair of you attacked him." The bus company is introducing ticket inspectors aboard its buses in Norfolk and Suffolk in a bid to fight fare dodgers. And from June the 17th, revenue protection officers will be riding the first bus network to check people are travelling with a valid ticket and the relevant ID card. The firm claims one of the biggest forms of fare evasion is adults buying child tickets to obtain half-price travel. People also reportedly push onto buses without paying when there's a queue to board, or use other people's concessionary passes. Passengers found to fall short of the rules will face a £50 charge and have 21 days to pay or make an appeal. The charge will rise to £100 if unpaid in the designated time, and those who ignore the charge will be issued with a county court summons. Piers Marlowe, Managing Director of First Bus East of England, said revenue protection officers will be travelling on buses across the region, checking tickets for validity and answering general questions about our services. The role is there to enhance the customer experience, aid driving colleagues with customer queries, and allow them to focus on their main priority, which is getting our customers to and from their destinations safely. The officers will travel on all service throughout the day at random times, so we advise all customers travelling to make sure they have a valid ticket ready for inspection at all times. The revenue protection officers will wear body-worn cameras, which will only start recording when activated by the officer. If children are issued with a charge, First Bus will send a letter addressed to the parent or guardian of the passenger if the payment has not been made. And a boating story. The owners of a 100-foot boat say they've been marooned on the boards because of the ongoing dispute between the operators of the bridge are refusing to open it to allow them to pass. Terry and Tina Everett want to leave Norfolk on their barge, Whalo, but have been stuck here for 6 weeks because the company responsible for Great Yarmouth Haven Bridge will not lift it. The crossing, which must open to allow boats to leave the Broads and head to sea, has previously suffered from maintenance problems, but is now in full working order. However, as we previously reported, Peel Ports are refusing to open it for ill-defined health and safety reasons and have not given any indication when it may lift again. It's the latest flashpoint in an ongoing row between the firm and Norfolk County Council, which owns the crossing, that has led to a rising tide of anger among boaters and marine companies. Peel Ports has refused to open the 1930s bridge for the last 2 months, with negotiations reaching a stalemate. As reported last week, one firm claims it has lost millions of pounds of business because of the continued closure of the crossing. The situation has left Mr. Everett threatening to attempt to pass underneath regardless of whether it's open or not, a manoeuvre he says could be very dangerous. If it doesn't get resolved, then we'll have to risk going under, he said. If we hit with 120 tons of boat, then they really will have a health and safety issue. Mr. and Mrs. Everett, who lived on the boat for 13 years, hope to sail their 100-foot barge, Whalo, to its new berth in Essex from its current mooring on the River Bure. Before this, the vessel, which is nearly a century old, must undergo a historic ship survey at Alicat Workboats, a firm on the other side of the bridge in Yarmouth, to ensure it is seaworthy. Going through Haven Bridge is the only option, as the boat is too big to fit through the alternative route of Alton Broadlock near Lowestoft. The move has been in the works for 2 years, but due to the bridge blockade, they're stuck. It's ridiculous, said Mr. Everett, who is retiring after running Everett Marine Services, a Broads boatyard, for a number of years. They have no right to hold us against our will. The bridge is fully operational. It feels like health and safety issues are being used as an excuse. He is so exasperated that he says if it is still not opening in 2 weeks' time, he will try and navigate under it. He warns that this would be very risky, because he could only attempt it during a low ebb tide when the water is flowing quickly out to sea. We need a really low tide to get under. It's a big boat. The trouble is, the tide would be behind us, making it dangerous and we could lose control. Haven Bridge, which carries one of the main roads into Yarmouth across the Yare, has been shut to boat traffic since April. It's a vital route that allows boaters to travel between the Norfolk Broads and the North Sea. Because the bridge is relatively low, vessels can only safely pass when the bridge is open. Peel Ports, as the operator of Great Yarmouth Port, has a statutory duty to operate the bridge as per two Acts of Parliament made in 1866 and 1925. However, it is refusing to open it following an incident in February when frustrated members of the public abuse members of staff after it malfunctioned. The move comes just months after multi-million pound repairs were completed to bring the crossing back into operation after it suffered a major fault in 2019. A spokesman for Peel Port said, "These incidents exposed our staff to unacceptable risks that we escalated to Norfolk County Council for resolution. Following several meetings aimed at resolving our concerns, NCC is continuing to refuse to accept any health and safety obligations, and we are continuing our attempts to address this." NCC has said it's keen to resolve the issue as soon as possible, but for now, the two authorities remain at a stalemate. The boat was built in 1926 by Prussian shipbuilders in an area of Eastern Europe that's now part of Russia, close to the Polish border. It's 100 feet long and weighs 120 tonnes and is named after the province where it was built. And another boating story, another boat that stuck but in a different way. Three people needed rescuing after a boat collided with the riverbank on the Norfolk Broads. The cruiser was left high and dry after running aground between Burney Arms Windmill and Reedham. After grounding on the island, a large area of marshland bordered by the rivers Yare, Waveney and the New Cut, the three passengers were left stranded for several hours. Following the incident, a crew from RNLI Great Yarmouth and Gorleston were paged by Humber Coast Guard at 8:30 p.m. on Tuesday. The crew attempted to tow the cruiser back into the water and a line was passed across. After several attempts, the boat became free and was floated back onto the open water. Once back on the river, the skipper restarted the engine and the vessel was escorted back to Goodchar Marine. Overgrown verges. Weeds and overgrown verges and curbs are making parts of Great Yarmouth look worse than a war zone, frustrated residents have said. Posts on social media about the lack of grass cutting on pavements and communal spaces have led to a councillor saying the work is simply not good enough. Frustrations are growing over the unkempt pavements around Gorleston, Bradwell and Great Yarmouth. Gorleston homeowner Philip Stone said the post-apocalyptic state of some of the verges creates a hostile environment in the community. It hardly sets a welcoming tone, he said. I've seen war zones that look better. It feels as if the council is saying, we don't care about your community. So why should anyone else care? The bigger issue, though, is the amount of weeds around. I can't see why it's not being done. Frankly, people are fed up with it. In an effort to tackle the problem, Mr. Stone said he's recently encouraged his neighbours to cut the grass in front of their homes. But why are we paying taxes on maintenance for things like this and then having to do it ourselves? He said perhaps the answer is communities to band together, pay for a subcontractor to carry out verge maintenance and then send the council the bill. It's shameful. I complained last year when the daffodils were destroyed on Caister Road. It was a welcoming sight for people entering the town, said Mr. Sprague. The flowers never really grew back, and now the grass is waist high in places. They seem to have withdrawn any attention to the area. It just looks a mess now. I just don't know where their priorities are. Bradwell councillor Daniel Camden posted a statement on Facebook saying, work is underway to try and have this matter resolved. The people in his ward. The quality of the work, or lack of in some areas, is simply not good enough, and I remain as frustrated as you, Mr. Camden said in his post. A spokesman for Norfolk County Council said all urban grass cutting in the Great Yarmouth area is undertaken by Great Yarmouth Borough Council via a service level agreement. The way this works is that Norfolk County Council pay them for four urban cuts a year, which they may or may not supplement with additional cuts depending on their own borough finances, the spokesman said. We do not tell them when to cut. They manage the cutting schedule themselves. Norfolk County Council, in more rural areas of the borough, do undertake a rural cut once a year, and this may be supplemented with a further cut of visibility sprays later in the summer. With regards to weed spraying, the spokesman added that a Norfolk County contractor undertakes weed spraying one spray a year, which is likely to commence in the next few weeks. However, the spokesman said, spraying is weather dependent. Great Yarmouth Borough Council has been contacted by the Mercury for comment.
More news coming shortly, but first, pin back your lug holes for the list of July's happenings at Vision Norfolk. If you'd like any more information about any of the following, or you'd like to book a space, please speak to the staff, who'll be more than happy to help, and I'll give you the contact details later. Right, Monday the 1st, Breakfast Club from 10 until 12, and the Life Skills Cooking Group is from 2 until 4. Wednesday the 3rd, it's a coffee morning from 10 until 12. And on Thursday the 4th, games morning from 10 until 12. Friday the 5th, it's basket weaving from 10 until 12, with July's Fishy Friday from 1 until 2. Monday the 8th, the baby group from 11 until 12:30. And on Tuesday the 9th, tennis from 10:30 until 12. Wednesday the 10th is coffee morning at 10 until 12, followed on Thursday the 11th by July games morning from 10 until 12 and knit and natter from 1 until 3. Friday the 12th is the Bure Valley train and river cruise. Please get in touch with the Yarmouth Hub for more info. Monday the 15th, Martham Coffee Morning from 10 until 12. And Wednesday the 17th, the July Hub is closed. Thursday the 18th, it's July Games Morning from 10 until 12. And on Wednesday the 24th, another coffee morning and a drop-in session with Humanware. And please note that it's 11 until 1 on this occasion. For 1 week only. Thursday the 25th, games morning from 10 until 12, and the July seafront walk in the afternoon from 1 until 3. Friday the 26th has basket weaving from 10 until 12, and the July audio book club from 1:30 until 3. Monday the 29th, new client drop-in from 10 until 1. And on Tuesday the 30th, clip and climb from 3 until 4. Get in touch with the Hub for more info on that one. Wednesday the 31st, coffee morning at 10 until 12. And the one-to-one tech session for July is from 1 until 2. For any info on any activities, please contact the Hub and speak to a member of staff who'll be happy to help. The Vision Norfolk Great Yarmouth Hub telephone number is 01493 745 973. The email is greatyarmouthhub@visionnorfolk.org.uk. And as a reminder, the Hub is at 12 Hall Quay, Great Yarmouth, NR31HP. Okay. It's back to Andy now for more local news, followed very closely by some more weirdness from Norfolk.
Bosses at a Norfolk brewery hoping to open a bar have responded to concerns from neighbours about the possible impact of noise on a quiet village. East Norfolk Cider, an award-winning brewery based in Scrapby, is seeking permission to open a tap room in neighbouring Ormsby St Margaret. The bar would be called the Butcher's Tap Room and showcase the brewery's own cider and apple juice, as well as selling a selection of local ales, spirits and wine, and hot drinks and snacks. The proposed location is on Wapping in a former estate agent's Town and Country, which closed down in September last year. The plans are facing objections from some 14 residents who've raised concerns about the potential impacts of noise from the bar. One neighbour said, "The addition of what, in essence, is a public house with tables outside will inevitably result in noise nuisance in a quiet lane." Another person said the village already has a pub where people can meet and have a drink with friends. The owners of the brewery have attempted to address the concerns and confirmed that the tap room would open from 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. Sunday to Wednesday and 12 p.m. to 9 p.m. Thursday to Saturday. They also said that the bar would be aimed at the older population and that the risk of antisocial behaviour is minimal. A document supporting the application highlighted the potential social benefits to the bar and indicated there would be benches at the front of the building to allow people to sit outside. East Norfolk Cider have operated their brewery in Scrappy for 14 years. A decision on the bid, which has been submitted to Great Yarmouth Borough Council, is expected on July the 2nd. And a boost for East Anglia. East Anglia is set to benefit from £80 billion of investment in its major energy projects. Of the £800 billion being pumped into UK energy schemes, 10% will be spent in the East. Neil Golding, Director of Marketing Intelligence for the Energy Industries Council, said it will be a boost for business in the region. There are sizeable projects in the region and there will be significant pulls on the supply chain and the need to scale up. We could see more than £800 billion spent on all the energy projects across the UK if all the projects announced proceed. East Anglia is not insignificant, with 10% of the capital expenditure if everything goes ahead. He said onshore wind will account for a third of the £800 billion UK energy spend, followed by nuclear. Some of the world's largest offshore wind projects are located off the coast of Norfolk and Suffolk in the southern North Sea. However, Mark Wilson of Offshore Energies UK told the East of England Energy Group Southern North Sea Conference that £100 billion is needed to be spent on the national grid to carry the power to where it is needed. "We need to be action-focused with a faster pace of change," he said, speaking at the annual conference at the Norfolk Showground last month. "We want to see more energy projects developed here, serviced by supply chain companies based in the UK. The multi-billion domestic investment was a huge opportunity. It will help companies compete for the £1 trillion global market. We want to see a sign above the door that says clearly, the UK is open for business, with understanding from the government that the UK is in competition against other countries for investment. We can't stand still. The supply chain is the golden thread that runs through the energy transition." Land has been cleared to make way for the construction of a larger branch of a popular discount supermarket. Earlier this year, Lidl announced plans to build a bigger store in Great Yarmouth, just yards away from its current branch on Pasteur Road. Less than a 5-minute walk away, the former Trafalgar College has been reduced to rubble to make way for the new supermarket branch, with construction expected soon. But to keep competition fair with nearby shops, including the nearby Tesco, which opposed Lidl's bid for a larger store, the two Lidls are not allowed to be open at the same time. A spokesman for Lidl confirmed the Pasteur Road store will remain open until the Thamesfield Way branch opens in 2025. And the new supermarket will be 42% larger than the current store. During initial planning consultations for the new Lidl, Tesco argued it could lead to the harm of other retail centres in the town and pose a threat to future investment. However, it was decided it would not have a significant effect on the number of people visiting the shops in the town centre. And another shopping and alcohol related planning issue. Bradwell Parish Council is objecting to a petrol forecourt's plans to sell alcohol over fears of antisocial behaviour. Morrison's petrol station on Borough Road in Bradwell has applied to Great Yarmouth Borough Council for a new licence. The shop is hoping to sell alcohol off the premises from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day. The application will be heard by members of the Borough Council's Licensing Subcommittee on Tuesday, June the 18th. Bradwell Parish Council is objecting over potential further antisocial behaviour in the village. Originally, the business was applying to sell alcohol off the premises from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. every day and supply late night refreshments from 11 p.m. to 5 a.m. every day. This application received objections from Bradwell Parish Council, as well as councillors Daniel Candon, Carl Smith and Graham Plant. The applicant then agreed to amend the application to supply of alcohol from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. and no late night refreshments. Councillors Candon, Smith and Plant then withdrew their objections, but Bradwell Parish Council did not. And another, well, sort of pub story. Groundworks have started at a derelict pub which will soon be the site of new homes. New owners have taken over the long-closed First and Last pub in Ormsby, and it is believed work has begun in converting the site into a new home, with four new builds alongside it. The director of the site's previous owner, Yeah Properties Limited, confirmed a sale took place last month. Since closing for good more than a decade ago, the 11th century building has seen various bids for housing, including a rejected proposal to knock it down to create space for 10 homes in 2015. The pub site suffered an arson attack in 2019. Its fate was finally decided in 2022, when councillors granted permission for the building to be converted into a home with 2 4-bedroom detached houses and 2 3-bedroom semi-detached houses built next to the converted pub. Ahead of the proposal, a committee report by council officers welcomed reusing the pub building in a prominent location and converting brownfield land. And a sad story. Richard Hawkins has died. A flag has been flying at half-mast at the Yarmouth lifeboat station after the death of a former crew member. Richard Strawberry Hawkins, who served as coxswain and mechanic at Great Yarmouth and Gorston RNLI during the 1970s, 80s and 90s, has died at the age of 80 years. He came to the station in 1972 from Dover, where he had originally been a member of their crew, alongside his brother. He took over as coxswain at the Gorston station in that year, and carried on in this role until his retirement in 1996, and for much of this time he was also the station mechanic. Mr. Hawkins has been remembered as a hell of a seaman who had a massive sense of duty. He was born in February 1944 in Kent. His parents were hoteliers and publicans who ran the famous Green Man pub in St Margaret's Bay in Dover. His father was in the RNLI, and both of his sons would follow him into the charity. When Richard left school at 16 years old, he went straight into the RNLI and was stationed at Dover Lifeboat from 1959. He also worked as a driving instructor, and one of his students, Jane Hammond, became his wife. In 1972, he was offered the job of coxswain mechanic at Great Yarmouth and Gorleston lifeboat, and he moved to Norfolk with his wife. Their first child, Chris, was born in 1977, and 2 years later, Carl was born, and they were joined by Naomi in 1982. Lindsay Wigmore, lifeboat operations manager at Gorleston Station, said that Mr. Hawkins was well known for his courage and seamanship. During his time with the RNLI, he made a high number of rescues and saved many lives, for which he received the thanks of the institution, inscribed on vellum, for rescues involving the Seaforth Conqueror in 1986, the yacht Southern Cross in 1990, and the yacht Paul Doe in 1995. In 1980, he was awarded the institution's Bronze Medal for Bravery in recognition of his rescue of two crew from the fishing vessel St. Marguerite, which was stranded on Scroby Sands. High winds and rough seas in December 1979 made the rescue hazardous, but Mr. Hawkins' skill as a coxswain saved the two lives, and the rescue was made using the Waveney-class lifeboat Carmi, which was his first vessel as coxswain. In his last 2 years of service, Mr. Hawkins made 38 service launches and saved 6 lives. He always had a supportive crew and was well known throughout the Great Yarmouth and Gorleston area, as well as in the RNLI family. The station's flag is flying at half-mast in a tribute to his dedication and service. Mr. Hawkins retired from the RNLI due to ill health in 1996, after almost 40 years. His son Carl said, "He was a total one-off, a real larger-than-life character. Even up to the day he died, if you gave him a pager and it went off, he'd still try to get the lifeboat. He had a massive sense of humour. He was a hell of a seaman. There was not much he couldn't do in a boat." His twin brother, Tony, still works as the station manager at Dover Lifeboat, a gold medal winner and an MBE. Mr. Hawkins died peacefully on June the 8th in a nursing home in Lowestoft. And now another one of these weird Norfolk stories. And this considers a bit of a stroll from Great Yarmouth to Burgh Castle. With people living here for centuries, our region is abundant in history and oozing with ghost stories. This piece considers parts of our local area that might not, at first sight, be associated with anything untoward. However, Great Yarmouth, now a seaside resort, was once a busy fishing port. The town is ancient, even older than Norwich, and was once confined to city walls. Buildings were only allowed to be built within the walls, which made the town very overcrowded. This allowed the bubonic plague to ravage through the town. Great Yarmouth officials were unable to cope with the large numbers of deaths, and many were buried in large mass burials known as plague pits. Great Yarmouth Fire Station was built above a friar's burial ground, and supposedly one such plague pit. Dating back to 1348, the graves of 15 skeletons were uncovered during excavations on the site in the 1970s. The Eastern Daily Press reported in June 1972 that firefighters would respond to late-night calls in record time. "In fact," said leading fireman Ron Harris, "we just can't get out of the place quick enough." First to get a midnight shiver down his back was fireman Jimmy Jones. "Just after midnight, I was sitting alone in the dormitory, which is directly over the top of the friar's burial ground, when I heard what sounded like whistling. It got louder, as if someone was walking along the corridor, and the sound stopped outside the dormitory. It was a very slow, tuneless whistle, almost like a dirge. I wouldn't have minded if it had been out of the top 10. Fireman Jones went to investigate, but found a deserted corridor. Ron Harris later heard urgent steps along the corridor at 1:30 a.m. The sound of doors opening and a crash. I don't mind saying it's all getting a bit prickly, he said. There isn't just ghost stories to be told, but tales of witches in Great Yarmouth. The strangely named Kitty Witch's Row is an example of an extremely tight row built between houses. The row was supposedly named after a local group of witches known to be of ill repute and terrorise locals. Or was the row named after crabs found in Braden Water, locally known as Kitty Witches? In some places, the row was so narrow you had to enter sideways and do an unusual crab-like walk. Another witch linked to Great Yarmouth was Rebecca Nurse, who, born in the town, was one of three sisters accused of witchcraft in the infamous Salem witch trials and the second person to be hanged. Anyway, our stroll starts at Duke's Head Pub near Haven Bridge. It is said that the legend of the demon dog Old Scarf, frequenter of Borough Castle, has ties to the Duke's Head Pub. Old Scarf, or Baron Rudolph Scarf, was well known to be a wicked and depraved German man, notorious in 16th century for evil deeds, who sought asylum in England. He settled at Borough Castle and terrorised the good people of Yarmouth. The story goes that when Scarf was finally killed, the devil turned him into a black hellhound with chains and eyes gleaming red like fire and sent him back to Earth to create further havoc. It is said that a Catholic priest imprisoned him at the Duke's Head Pub. An old book, Palmer's Perlustrations, published in 1872, goes into detail of Scarf. It was currently believed that the evil one, under the familiar name of Old Scarf, assumed the shape of a black dog, and on dark wintry nights was heard rushing up and down the South Town Road, making sorrowful moanings and dragging after him a clanking chain. An endeavour was made to exorcise this spectre, and at one time this was supposed to have been effected, the evil spirit being doomed to remain in a vault under the Duke's Head Inn, until the river should cease to run under Yarmouth Bridge. Notwithstanding this, however, Old Scarf continued to be a terror to benighted travellers. The old wooden bridge is no longer there. So is Old Scarf still lurking in the Duke's cellar? Anyway, a stroll crosses Haven Bridge and leaves the town heading toward Braden Water. Braden Water is, of course, an estuary of three Broadland rivers, the Yare, Bure and Waveney. It was once part of a much larger estuary that would have occupied the valley and surrounding marshland. It has been witness to many events in human history that have unfolded over its waters, and maybe why it has many ghost stories to tell. Two men were out fishing in a small rowing boat on Braden Water on a cold night on the 11th of July 1929, when a whole fleet of ghost ships passed by, phosphorescent and leaving a large wake that didn't even rock their small rowing boat. It soon became obvious they were from a different time. The men were cheering, and one looked overboard, but could not see the fishermen, even at a stone's throw distance. The fishermen observed the fleet of boats were of Anglo-Saxon style. Could it be the ghostly annual visit of a fleet of Saxon ships on its way to raid Borough Castle? Referring to historical records, there were two famous Saxon chiefs who arrived with their armies from overseas in AD 447, and that El or Ella landed on the east coast the same time as Sissa landed on the south coast. Is this ghostly sighting the replaying of El's landing in Britain over and over? Other witnesses report a battle raging between a pirate ship and two smaller vessels, which appears every September. Not a ghost story, but just as spine-chilling, is the big cat sighting reported in this article in the Great Yarmouth Mercury on the 26th of March, 2004. Tales of big cats stalking the countryside will be fuelled this week after a Borough Castle parish councillor spotted one of the elusive creatures. In the latest sighting, John Rudram said he saw a black and powerful animal run off into the bushes in Mill Lane, Borough Castle, as his headlights lit it up. The 50-year-old said he caught sight of the last two-thirds of the cat-like beast before it vanished into the undergrowth towards Braden Marshes at 10 p.m. on Saturday. He added, "There's nothing wrong with my eyesight, but I just couldn't believe when I saw this thing spring into the hedge. I couldn't work out what it was, but the way it sprang off, it was not a dog or a deer. It was puma-sized, had powerful hind legs, a smooth coat, and looked the colour of graphite. I would say it was roughly 9 inches bigger than a boxer dog, and about 4 foot long." Norfolk is just one of dozens of areas of Britain where sightings of big cats have been reported in recent years. It is believed animals such as pumas and panthers came from zoos in the 1960s, when onerous rules made them expensive to keep. However, no animal has yet been captured to back up the theory. Mr. Rudram, who's lived in the village all his life, said rumours were rife in the area's pubs of big cats living in Fritton Woods and Braden Marshes. He added, "This put the wind up me. It was shocking. Perhaps the bad weather had drawn it down out of the woods. I've always joked about seeing one, but as a hunting man, I would not like to come face to face with one of these things without being armed. The weird thing is none of the farmers round here have reported having any animals being slaughtered. I think that if these big cats are doing no one any harm, then there's no reason to hunt them down. They're more scared of us than we are of them." Big cat expert Ken Sims, director of the Frigby Hall Wildlife Park, said the animals were masters of camouflage. He added, "I would not deny their existence, but because they're so elusive, it makes things extremely difficult to prove. Conditions here are perfect for them. There are deer, rabbits and hares to feed on, but so far all we have are unconfirmed sightings of them. There have been sightings of big cats in this country for the last 35 years, and the chances of being attacked by one are slim." Continuing on, we have Borough Castle, a 3rd century Roman fort built to defend the coast from Saxon raiders. Overlooking the marshes is Burney Mill, the tallest mill in Norfolk in the distance. Baron Rudolf Scarfe makes another unwanted appearance at the fort, and is said to be now where he lurks when darkness falls in the form of a black dog. Not to be mistaken for the black shook which haunts coastal parts and the lonely parts of East Anglia. To meet him would mean death within the year. Does Scarfe continue to spread terror, travelling back and forth between Yarmouth and the fort? Some claim that it's a werewolf. One investigator witnessed a man morph into a fearsome dog-like creature at the site before padding off into the night. Other ghosts haunt this atmospheric ruin, including a figure that appears to be wearing a white flag, which can be seen thrown from the castle to the foreshore. You can explore the fort, but be careful who is hiding behind each turn. Would you dare brave these places on a misty night, now that you know these stories? You ain't nothing but a hound dog, girl, crying all the time. You ain't nothing but a hound dog, crying all the time. Well, you ain't never caught a rabbit and you ain't no friend of mine. Well, they said you was high class. Well, that was just a lie. Yeah, they said you was high class.
Well, you know who with his hound dog there. OK, time to get completely up to date with the rest of this week's local news.
And a Norfolk emergency nurse has received top honours for her exceptional work in supporting the nursing profession. Natalie Brooks, who works at the James Paget Hospital, accepted the Royal College of Nursing's Award of Merit for her significant role as the RCN Eastern Region Board Chairwoman and its representative. Fulfilling her duties alongside her career and her voluntary roles in the RCN, Miss Brooks has made noteworthy strides towards an inclusive environment. She ardently promotes member participation in RCN activities, such as the RCN Congress, while reaching out to the underrepresented, internationally educated nursing professionals. RCN Eastern Region Director Teresa Budley said, "Natalie is so passionate about nursing and the role of the RCN, she firmly believes members have the power to make change. She is seen as the trusted voice within the region and is a strong supporter of our black and ethnic minority members. During our campaign for fair pay for nursing staff, Natalie became a lead member for us in the Eastern Region. She ensured the region was represented and key messages were heard during the industrial action by visiting wards and picket lines, as well as ensuring the public heard the nursing voice through speaking to the media. This award pays tribute to Natalie's commitment, vigour, hard work and her ability to get the best out of others." Miss Brooks said, "I'm very proud and surprised to receive the Order of Merit. I'm honoured and privileged to be the RCN Eastern Board Chairman. It has given me opportunities to support and interact with amazing members and the nursing family across the region. They give me my passion and the drive to continuously want better for nursing and the college." And younger people. Pupils at a village school gained an insight into house building careers thanks to a major developer. Construction experts from Barrett and David Wilson Homes visited Threethorpe Community Primary School to educate and inspire Year 6 pupils about the multitude of careers in house building. Barrett and David Wilson Homes Anglia representatives Ari Rosvarecht, Project Engineer Simon Nelson, Technical Director, and Jessica Groom, Planner, shared their industry knowledge, sparking pupils' curiosity. The pupils showed interest in the industry, asking pressing questions and seeking future career advice. "We were pleased to be able to contribute to such a valuable and well-organised careers fair." Simon Wood, Managing Director at Barrett and David Wilson Homes Anglia, said, "We're appreciative of Threethorpe Community Primary School for including us in its Year 6 Careers Fair. Engaging with young students is crucial, and we're committed to helping them explore the diverse career opportunities available to them." And moving on to, well, I suppose it's the entertainment industry. A new play exploring the writer's struggles with mental health will debut at St George's Theatre this month. The play, titled Matt, is the creative brainchild of Peter Dewar, a local writer who has drawn from his own battles with depression, anxiety and addiction to create a narrative infused with resilience, hope and the transformative power of community. Mr Dewar, who lives in Great Yarmouth, said, "The story not only mirrors my own quest for healing, but also examines the universal pursuit of hope in times of adversity." He credited sharing his mental health experiences as a form of catharsis and hopes his play will inspire others facing similar struggles. The production will be held at the theatre on Friday, June 21st and Saturday, June 22nd at 7 p.m. In an initiative to make theatre accessible to all, the theatre is operating a pay-what-you-like policy with all proceeds going to Northgate Hospital. This facility, as Mr. Dewar pointed out, played a significant role in his recovery journey. Mr. Dewar not only penned the script for Matt, but is also the director. The South Norfolk-based production includes a cast of 5 professional actors, all hailing from Norfolk. The production is funded by the Arts Council. During Mr. Dewar's recovery from addiction, he served as a volunteer at the very theatre where his play will now premiere. He said, "It was an experience that gave me a much-needed sense of purpose and community. This evolved into a passion for stagecraft and ultimately led me to write and direct Matt." Debbie Thompson, theatre director at St George's, said, "This is an important play about a subject that's rarely portrayed on stage in such a raw and personal way." Mr. Dewar has also initiated a Facebook group that provides a secure platform for people to discuss their experience and build a supportive community focused on well-being and mutual encouragement. And an opportunity to hear some very fine musicians. The BBC Concert Orchestra Brass Ensemble is to grace Great Yarmouth St George's Theatre June the 14th, rocking its beamed roof with a blend of melodies and fanfares from composers including Bach, Poulenc, Sondheim and Gershwin. This all-encompassing musical journey will traverse 2 continents and 4 centuries. A heartfelt homage to Bramwell Tovey, the late principal conductor of the BBC Concert Orchestra, will be performed by the ensemble, conducted by Richard Ward. They will present his composition, Deo Gloria. Debbie Thompson, the theatre's director, expressed her excitement for the upcoming performance. Mrs. Thompson said, "This is an amazing opportunity for people in Yarmouth to hear top-class musicians at the peak of their powers performing a truly accessible programme. And there could be no better venue for this music across the ages than our beautiful 300-year-old building." And an escape room in Great Yarmouth is planning to expand only 1 year after opening. Great Yarmouth Escape Rooms opened in July last year inside the former Eon Scroby Sands Offshore Wind Farm Visitor Centre on the promenade north of the Britannia Pier. Since then, the attraction has seen more than 3,500 people come through its doors. Company Director Gavin Dean said, "When we opened last summer, we hit the ground running, with many local residents eager to get through the doors. Alongside this, we had an excellent summer for tourists. We had expected a lull in the winter months, but we soon noticed we were one of the few attractions open all year." Mr. Dean said many hotels have groups and couples looking for something to do, and they go to the escape rooms. "It just shows if the town can boost its out-of-season offerings, then alongside its great range of hotels, there's a market out there," he said. The business is now planning to add more rooms, with any decision depending on whether they can find the right venue. Among the ideas being discussed by the team are axe throwing and an electric shuffleboard. The business was nominated for the best new escape room in the UK and currently offers 2 games, Wizards and the Potion Master and Conjured Spirits and Demons. The team worked with attraction designers in Dubai, prop builders in Europe and used installers from the UK. Mr. Dean said, "We invested heavily in making sure we brought the best and most up-to-date rooms to Great Yarmouth. We worked closely with expert prop builders and carefully planned our rooms' immersiveness, which has paid off. People can stay up to date with the development of the rooms, with the behind-the-scenes news, by following their social media pages and their website, www.greatyarmouthescaperooms.co.uk. And more entertainment. a popular sitcom star, is heading to East Anglia as part of his latest project for the BBC. Charlie Cooper is best known for creating This Country with his sister Daisy May Cooper, but he will appear on fan screen solo in an upcoming documentary series. Charlie Cooper's local legends will follow the 34-year-old as he tours the UK in a camper van to investigate the truth behind some of the country's gloriously bonkers rural myths by speaking to witnesses, visiting hotspots, and conducting investigations. Scenes are set to include a trip to East Anglia to hear about the region's roaming ghost dogs. Sightings of the so-called devil dog, Black Shuck, have been reported in Norfolk, Suffolk, Cambridgeshire and Essex for centuries. The huge black entity is said to have one glowing eye and a fiery breath. It is said to lurk around the coast, rural roads and churchyards after dusk, condemning anyone who meets it to die within 12 months of the encounter. The series, made by Fremantle's Naked West for the BBC, will be split into three 30-minute episodes. Cooper said, "I'm really excited about this new series, as I've always been fascinated by local legends, myth and folklore. As I see it, my mission is to explore our ancient world, seek out mythical creatures and boldly go where no TV presenter has gone before." Tom O'Brien, MD of Naked and executive producer, added, "We're delighted to be working with Charlie and BBC Three on a brand new adventure series ripe with character, kookiness and the uncanny. British folktales are finding a new life once again, with a real explosion of interest, so it's a great time to unearth their origin, quirks and meaning for the present day." An attraction that's gone. Hundreds of people lined the quayside to wave goodbye to the Spanish tall ship that drew large crowds to Great Yarmouth. The galleon Andalusia fired a cannon in appreciation to those wishing her a fond farewell as she left Great Yarmouth on Tuesday. After being in the town for 2 weeks, the replica ship, whose design is similar to ships that dominated global waters throughout the 16th to 18th centuries, is now bound for the Netherlands before returning to British waters later in the week. Hundreds of people waved the tall ship goodbye as she passed along the River Yare and out to the open sea. Paul Snepp from Winterton visited Quay Road to catch a glimpse of the galleon in action. "This was definitely something not to be missed," he said. "It's been great seeing it moored on the South Quay, and it was clearly very popular for visitors and locals. We get tall ships fairly often, but it's always amazing when they stay a little bit longer so more people can enjoy them." Ship manager Alvaro Lecaro Guerrero said the warm reception from the thousands of people who visited made the stop all the more special for the crew. "We've been made very welcome in Great Yarmouth and we would love to come back, either with this ship or one of the other three ships in our fleet," he added. And for those exercise bound, a new paddle tennis court could be installed at Caldecott Hall Country Park, with views from the community being sought. The park operators called on locals to give their feedback over the exciting possibility of introducing the innovative sport to Caldecott Hall Country Park at Fritton. With a range of facilities on offer that are all open to the public, the company introduced numerous new innovations last year. As they seek views on a potentially exciting new facility for the local area, Greg Dodgett, Tingdean Operations Manager, said, "At Caldecott Hall Country Park, we're always looking at ways to innovate and improve. As part of this ethos, and in the past year alone, we have introduced new facilities to the park such as disc golf, foot golf and rugby golf, and a golf academy. Looking ahead to the future, we wanted to gauge the thoughts of our local community with regards to exploring the exciting possibility of a paddle tennis court at Caldecott Hall Country Park. Paddle is an innovative form of tennis that is fun, easy to play and learn and be sociable. Described as a blend between tennis and squash, it's growing in popularity in the UK. It is played mainly in a doubles format on an enclosed court, about a third of the size of a tennis court, and can be played in groups of mixed ages and abilities. Players use solid perforated paddles, similar to those used in beach tennis. People are being invited to dive into fun and fitness with a new offer exclusive to people living in Great Yarmouth. The Marina Centre has relaunched its Passport to Leisure, giving people half-priced entry to casual swimming, clip and climb and aqua play. The Passport also offers Kids for a Quid sessions in the pool. The scheme runs through June and the Passport is free to everyone living in the borough. And for more information, visit freedom-leisure.co.uk. And my last story, I've saved the last for best. It's about a horse and carriage ride for a lady. They say good things come to those who wait. For Gina Brown, her wish was to enjoy a ride on a horse and carriage, and it was finally granted last week as she turned 106 years old. 106. What a girl. The Gorleston woman celebrated her birthday on Tuesday, June the 4th, with a jaunt around the town, finally ticking the activity off her bucket list. The ride was arranged by her carers, One-to-One Home Care, which is based on Gorleston High Street, and was provided free of charge by local man Shane Dockra. On the day, he collected Miss Brown from her home and brought her to the Care Agency's branch on High Street, where carers and locals were waiting to wave to her as she came down the road. And the ride was followed by a tea and cake party. Elena Smith, care coordinator, said she really felt like a queen that day and it was truly deserved. Gina had such a lovely, overwhelming, unexpected day. The care agency had also asked the local community through social media and word of mouth to send a birthday card, and Miss Brown received 124 handmade cards from the local brownies and guides. Lovely.
Well, that's it for this week's edition, which is copyright 2024 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Don't forget, you can contact us from our website at grapevinegy.org if you have any queries over our service. Your newsreader next week will be Margaret, so we hope for your company then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all of us at Grapevine, stay safe and well, and bye for now.